Hello there. Last night we launched Cloud Security News. It is our news edition of Cloud Security Podcast. It is the product of the Cloud Security Podcast team, and it is being hosted by Shilpi Bhattacharjee, who is the co-producer of Cloud Security Podcast and possibly editing this video as well. So I'll just drop this in there as a surprise. The episodes on Cloud Security News would focus on giving you a digest of everything that's happened in the cloud security space, presented by Shilpi Bhattacharjee and myself. And we will talk to you every week and just giving you the distilled version so you don't have to dig the internet for what's happening in cloud security. All right, over to the actual episode. See ya. Hello and welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. Today, my guest was Karthik Prabhakar. He's an advisor for a company called Equinox. And we spoke about network security in a cloud native world. A lot of you may have gotten into cloud recently, and a lot of you may have been working in the on-premise or what used to be a traditional data center for a long time. However, one thing we don't talk about enough in the market is how much has networking changed between what it used to be in the traditional world to what it is now. In a traditional world, if I remember correctly, when I graduated, a lot of people would talk about MCSP, which was Microsoft Certified Server Professional, I think that's what it used to be called. And before that, people used to put in their resumes, I'm an expert in PowerPoint, Excel, and Word. So it kind of shows you the transition that networking has gone through, that not everyone is asked for an MCSP anymore. People still ask for CCNA, especially if they have an older network that they're dealing with Cisco router. But if you are someone who's listening to this and going, nah, networking is not for me, I would still encourage you to hear this. What we went through is the place where we started in the beginning for people who may be new to the cloud world and cloud native world and don't know what networking used to be. And if you're a bit of a history buff, this is definitely a great episode for you. If you are someone who has been working in a regular data center world for 10 plus years, maybe even shorter or longer, and you have a great understanding of that network, this would be an episode for you where you can understand how has the thinking evolved. To give you a couple of hints, we no longer believe IP addresses are the future of networking. It's the identity of the application that you're trying to provide. You can provide this in different ways, authentication, authorization. You could be using cert management, but IP addresses probably are not the top of that list in this cloud native world or the cloud world that we're moving towards, where it's more about the application and how close can security be to the application instead of trying to be the traditional threat zone approach. How do I make an application scale while still using the benefits of being in cloud or cloud native? I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do like it, feel free to share this with your friends and family who are trying to learn about cloud security. Networking is a very foundational piece to anything IT. Every application that's being created has some requirement of internet connectivity or at least intranet connectivity. I think it would be a great episode, not spoken about enough. And if you are out there for that foundational knowledge, this was the episode that we wanted to cover as one of the last topics in the cloud native world. Hope you enjoy it. And as always, I appreciate you hanging out with us. If you like and subscribe, thank you so much. And if you're one of those people who have been commenting and sharing how much you love Cloud Security Podcast on social media, thank you so much. I cannot tell you how happy I am because recently we cracked open the 15,000 view. Yes, I laugh as I say this because we started off with 500 in the beginning of, I think, February 2020. And now we're sitting at about 15,000 views on most of our contents. So our average has gone from 500 to 15,000, which is pretty amazing. And I appreciate all of you supporting us and getting behind us. Thank you so much. And I also appreciate everyone who has given us a review and rating on iTunes, and also the ones who have given us a review and rating on Podchaser. Thank you so much. I really appreciate what you're doing for us. And thank you to Exonius, who are the sponsor for this episode, and also Equinox. You'll hear from Exonius next, and then we get into the episode. I will talk to you over the weekend where I have a Brazilian special for you. Yes, you heard that right. A Brazilian special coming up your way this weekend. Well, if you are curious, make sure you tune in on the live because, well, I don't know if it's going to be Portuguese, but definitely something Brazilian. I'll see you on the LinkedIn live or the YouTube live this weekend. Otherwise, I'll talk to you all over the weekend. Stay safe. Bye. Time is the enemy of security, and that's where Exonius comes in. Exonius helps organizations immediately know what assets they have and shows which devices, cloud instances, and users adhere to or deviate from security policies. Learn more and try it for free at exonews.com. For people who may not know who Karthik is, what was your pathway to your current position?
Yeah, by the way, I heard a couple of the podcasts from the Kubernetes Security Month. Amazing content. You know, for folks that haven't heard it, please go back and listen to it. So my background is, you know, I just have this sort of penchant the last many years of gravitating towards new technologies as they're emerging. In the last few years, I was actually privileged. This happened while I was at Red Hat, and then I joined Taigera, which is the team behind Calico, in the early days of Kubernetes. And it was sort of very fortunate, and I felt very privileged to have had the opportunity to help influence the adoption and not even how Kubernetes networking and network security gets adopted in the sort of mainstream organizations as the growth of Kubernetes happened. And likewise, along the way, you know, worked with the Istio and other service meshes in the early days, especially with Istio. And, you know, more recently, I was at a company called Tetrate. And along the way, you know, was working with everything from the big four cloud providers, including helping a couple of them with sort of build out their hosted Kubernetes offerings from a networking and network security perspective, and a number of leading organizations. And what I realized was, as much and as interesting as the stack is to some of us that know the innards of it,
yep,
a lot of the security organizations in most enterprises were sort of struggling to reconcile the complexity with all of technologies, the products, and sort of all of the buzzword bingo that goes on. So recently, I decided to take a step back and started focusing on, you know, doing two things. One is starting to play more of an advisory role to early stage startups, like Aquinox is a company I'm working from a product advisory role perspective recently, but also trying to help shape the products in a manner that they can be more consumable by mainstream organizations. And on the flip side, also working with some of these mainstream security teams, application teams, in helping them adopt the technology in a manner in which they can sort of reconcile and understand what's going on, try and minimize the extraneous complexity, which tends to exist in a lot of products. And so that's what I've been doing in the more recent past. And, you know, especially these days with the amount of scrutiny on cybersecurity and the amount of investment going on, it's an interesting challenge to keep those sort of forces, you know, in harmony.
For people who may not have captured the Kubernetes Security Month, Istio is an interesting one as well, because that's kind of where I feel cloud native networking starts getting a bit complex for some people. It's quite comprehensive. You're able to kind of see the inside and say divide an application aware network kind of a thing. So I could not think of a better person to kind of bring in for the show. So maybe a great place to start would be from a network security in a cloud context. What does that mean for you?
That's a very broad question, because it's like, you know, 12 blind men and an elephant. Everyone has a different perspective. Let's sort of step back from this a little bit. So if we first look at what does a cloud context mean for people, and what is, like, you know, like, what does it mean to be on a cloud? And you didn't qualify it by saying public cloud, private cloud. It's just any, you know, any real cloud. I think there's some fundamental principles that we've sort of adopted over the last few years around how we package up applications for portability. If most folks are familiar with the 12-factor application, the common things that people talk about in those contexts are things like having a declarative model, where you have a declarative way of defining what your application is doing. You have portability, although portability in the last few years, I think it's starting to become more pervasive. For a while, people were locking themselves into a single platform. And increasingly, you know, with platforms like Kubernetes and other sort of standards, things are becoming more portable across cloud platforms. Things like having some level of decoupling between the config and the build process, having a pipeline deployment model, continuous deployment. Those are all principles that come hand in hand with sort of packaging applications and deploying them in a cloud platform. But if you look at this from a security perspective, I think the last few years, security is also slowly starting to move in that same direction with a little bit of a lag. There's always been a little bit of tension in security practitioners to obviously not let go of things that they're familiar with. But when you realize that your cloud workloads are now much more dynamic the way people deploy applications, manage applications, and take care of, you know, heal around failures is much more different. It's increasingly important for network security and security in general, quite frankly, to also follow some of the same principles in terms of having, again, try and make your security artifacts declarative when possible, ideally in lockstep with the applications that they're protecting and the infrastructure that they're protecting. Typically have a pipeline deployment model with things like workflows and how you deploy things continuously, so you're not stuck with brittle infrastructure. So to me, when you ask about what does that mean, I tend to, you know, think about this as security and network security needing to follow how applications have evolved in adopting the cloud. So that's sort of a very crude way of describing my general instinct there. But again, look, everyone has their opinion on this.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad you mentioned it, because to your point, how many applications have been able to go into the whole 12-factor mode as well? I still remember when I was in college, university, there's the whole three-tier architecture where it's like, you have a web layer, you have an application layer, and you have a database layer. And to a large extent, people are still used to that in a network context, because if you ask to anyone who's from a networking background, hey, I need this network for an application. Okay, so are you, what kind of zones you're going to get into? And actually talking about zones, how different is this to a traditional network?
In the early days of my career, I sort of used to build networks for a living, host BGP across like hundreds of thousands of millions of devices, connecting all of these intranets and with different. And back in the day, you know, you used to have this wonderful concept of an internet and then an intranet with a nice little perimeter somewhere along the way. I think I'm dating myself, but you had this concept of firewalls come into play, and, you know, you had this nice
as well.
Exactly. And then as the commerce on the internet became more pervasive, let's say people started saying, oh, we need to have a DMZ, right? A demilitarized zone where we put our external assets, but all the crown jewels are sort of tucked away behind this firewall. And that mindset from a network security perspective has sort of evolved over the years, where if you look at a lot of organizations today, they've sort of decomposed that concept of a DMZ and internal into these things like, you know, I call them threat protection zones, where you have different classifications of saying, hey, these are the crown jewels. I'm going to collect them together in this zone. I'm going to have a different zone where this business unit can do business and they have the applications together and sort of. But fundamentally, if you step back and think about that, that is still the perimeter protection model, where you essentially have you've reduced the impact of a breach to things within that zone, again with the assumption that you have some very strict controls between zones. Now the reality though is, when you look at what's been happening in cloud native applications as they've gone to, as microservices adoption has happened with Kubernetes, serverless, service meshes, just vanilla cloud instances, these days the way people deploy applications is, look, when you're deploying microservices, you do incremental deployments. You might deploy a canary version, reroute 5% of your traffic to that trend canary. And if the performance is good, start to gradually redirect. And all of these sort of decisions are making your network connectivity between the microservices much more dynamic. So what might be sort of a traffic pattern flowing between these individual applications could dynamically change over time. And any sort of brittle boundaries that you built in the center of your infrastructure around a zone, generally speaking, they tend to struggle to keep up with the dynamism of cloud workloads. So when you look at the concept of what does networking mean in these days, increasingly there's sort of two ways to look at it. That is, I've been observing this, is one, there's sort of physical network or the cloud network from a physical or virtual perspective, in terms of, look, I have my different regions, I have my different pools of clusters and infrastructure, and I have my networks there. But then I have my application networks, which is ultimately my sort of connectivity between these microservices, and they are absolutely leveraging that same cloud networking paradigms. They're leveraging the networking within the cluster, but the connectivity is much more dynamic, because this is ultimately being controlled by an orchestrator that is taking your declarative manifest and saying, look, I ask you to deploy 5 instances or 5 pods of this application, but if the performance hits a certain threshold, start to add more pods. And the other pods could be in a different region. It could be in a different, you know. So this is sort of the new reality that we're dealing with in the cloud native world in terms of networks the network infrastructure, especially at the application level, is much more dynamic. And so it has some very specific implications from a, you know, obviously from a network security perspective as well.
I think it's really interesting, man, because how you've mentioned the journey that kind of applications have gone through. And I'm wondering, people who have listened to some may be new and some may be going, yeah, that's what we have kind of done in the past, and that's what we have moved on or continued doing in a cloud native world. I would love to kind of get into some of the challenges that these people would face, say, if you're coming from where you and I were kind of raised in a whole traditional networking world, where we had the three-tier architecture, 12-factor was not even a thing. And now going, I've got all this, I don't know, hundreds of machines that are moving into a cloud or maybe even a cloud native world. What are some of the challenges, maybe even the top three challenges from a security perspective that you think, because we've spoken about the change of mindset so far, you kind of have to think differently. But what are some of the obvious challenges you think that people would face? Like if I were to start building a cloud native environment today, in cloud or not in cloud, maybe in on-premise, but what are some of the challenges I can face?
There's challenges in adoption of individual technologies, but leaving that aside, I think if you look at this from, if I look at the kinds of customers I've been dealing with, which range from financial to gaming to public sector agencies to whatnot, as they've adopted sort of these new paradigms. Bigger picture, I'd say there's like two or three things that sort of jump to mind. One is when you look at how organizations are structured in terms of different teams, you have security teams, you have networking teams, you have platform teams, you have application teams. One of the challenges when it comes to security and adoption of these new sort of cloud native paradigms is, in my view, separation of concerns and separation of duties between teams. Because when you have to deploy an application, typically the application team knows the application the best. They can, you know what kinds of access is required, but it's the network team that needs to connect the network together. It's the security team that needs to potentially check off on the security rule sets that need to be allowed. And the challenge is most organizations are used to a sort of a traditional system where you have ticketing systems for firewall rules, for WAFs and whatnot. But in the new world, the challenge with that is the security team doesn't always understand all the nuances of the application. Application manifests change quite often. And so they have to rely on the application team to put the security control. But if you give all of these wonderful, you know, declarative security with, you know, policy as code and all of these wonderful features to an application team who is under the gun to get the product out quickly, the first thing they ask is, where's my allow all policy, allow everything? And so there's this constant battle, because this is why security teams come and say, oh, we can't trust the application team, so we need to review every application change. But the result of that is it causes friction and latency. And the problem with latency, especially if it takes days, weeks to review individual rule sets, which often happen, that then causes the application team to go, oh, they approved this rule last week. I'm just going to tunnel my new change through that existing rule and bypass the need to go ask for a new ticket. So it sort of causes all of these loopholes in security as a result of this friction between organizations. So that's sort of one challenge I've noticed, is not having that separation of concerns so you can automate more of these processes. So that's one. Second one, this is a common thing, which is, you know, both sides of the fence, people tend to hold on to things they know. So there's a lot of legacy process craft, which hold people back. A third one, which I've always, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot in some of the organizations, and I cannot generalize it to big versus small organizations, because I've seen dysfunctional small organizations and I've seen some big organizations that do things quite well. But sort of if you envision this concept of a pyramid, and the top of the pyramid is sort of having a well-thought-out set of business logic, rules, governance, administration procedures and interfaces. And the second tier of that pyramid is a way to translate those business rules and logic into individual policy instantiations that define how you tag and label resources, how you define metadata, how you define policy that needs to be instantiated, how you define compliance rules, whether it's internal compliance. And so that's the middle tier, is where you're defining the policy. And then the lowest tier of the pyramid is sort of the instantiation of the policy into individual platforms, into individual clouds, into individual products. And it's important to have all three tiers of the pyramid. But what I tend to see in some of the more dysfunctional organizations is that they often are focused on the bottom of the pyramid, which is, oh, I've got to deploy on this cloud platform. I've got this product. I've got this firewall. I've got this rule set. And they tend to sort of chase their tails in some way because they're chasing the latest new thing. But there's not an overarching governance that defines why they are doing that. So it's important to think of all of those. And I've seen, you know, this be done very effectively in some of the large organizations. But I've also seen a lot of organizations not have that sort of thought through reason as to why they're doing security a certain way in a certain platform. And that can be a very challenging thing to deal with. So these are some of the things I see quite commonly in organizations today.
Yeah, I think you kind of gave three good examples, man, because do you reckon it's also because we need to challenge the way, I'm just going to use a couple of big names here, like say Bank of America, or maybe more local to my place, like a Commonwealth Bank or whatever. These companies have existed for like 25, 30, 50 years, and they've always followed that traditional model for there's a separate network team, there's a separate security team. Well, I guess initially network security and security network was all in one batch. But now they separate that into governance and all that. For organizations that are like the large enterprises of the world that have been doing this for a long time, followed that traditional model. I'm thinking about people who are listening into this going, oh, I've got 15 years experience of doing network security. You've kind of raised some interesting things as well, because handing that control to a developer is probably not fair as well, because they're not trained in like, hey, this is how you do network security. If you want to have two servers talk to each other, you probably want to have them in the same network. Like that concept is probably not taught to them. And we've been able to kind of scale that. We still have global companies on that traditional network where it somehow worked. And the policy changes that you're talking about, hey, I think I've heard more of that from a scaling perspective. So I'll be saying it's easier to build if you have that pyramid structure in a cloud native world. But scaling, is that worth more for scaling? Or like, I guess how does scaling?
No, let's even step back from that, because I think there's some fundamental principles which are important to understand as you sort of migrate towards the newer architectural styles. One is it's increasingly important to have your security controls around the workload so that what you're protecting is the asset, not where the asset is located.
Okay,
and,
right.
And when you look at, you know, people talk about, you know, all of the fact that you need to worry about authentication and authorization and being able to audit what happened. So you have authent, authzy, and audit. But people sometimes forget that the underlying primitive that drives the auth and the authc and often the audit as well is having some notion of workload identity. And that is a critically important topic because, yes, you know, you could, some people tend to use IP addresses as, or DNS names as identity. Those are weak identities, but yes, that could be an additional source of identity. But the challenge is what happens when things move around, when things are dynamic and transient. And, you know, especially with things like IP addresses, you do have, you know, you do have, there's no guarantee that, you know, an IP address can't be changed along the way. So when you talk about financial organizations, you talk about network security practitioners, they've all sort of, they may have grown up in an age where they've built a set of rule sets and a firewall, and that's given them years of experience on how to control these zones. But ultimately, the world we are moving is where what you're protecting is the asset and who that asset is allowing, is being allowed to talk to it. And this is very loosely the concept that Google Beyond Corp describes. So if you're not familiar with the concept, you can go ahead and Google it, which is this concept where what you're protecting is the asset itself, the workload, the service, the application, with the level of authentication and authorization, i.e. the access controls, but with the appropriate identity that drives that. And the sort of takeaway from this is that as your workload moves around, you should, your security for the workload should move with the workload. If your user is coming in from somewhere out in the internet, on a web browser, in an edge workload somewhere, as long as you have some notion of what that user identity is, ideally a strong identity like a certificate or a JWT or JSON Web Token, actually even with multiple factors of identity, you should be able to allow that user to access that service, irrespective of whether that service is in a cloud or a different cloud or in a, you know, on-premise environment somewhere. And, you know, being able to move things around should have no bearing on having to go, you know, rejiggle things in the middle of the network. So interestingly, the mindset needs to be in the middle of the network, you might want to have some constrained protections, but your fine grade protections get closer and closer to the workload. And one last point, if I can make this way, is with platforms like Kubernetes, with service meshes, we finally do have the ability to decouple some of the security out of the application into a layer just in front of the application. And this is a new paradigm the last few years, last 3, 4, 5 years, that sort of given security teams a lot more opportunity to not have to actually get next to the workload, but still have that layer of independence from the application. And not, in fact, most organizations haven't, most security organizations haven't made that leap forward to benefiting from that capability. So this is sort of an interesting time in this space.
Can I ask you to kind of dig a bit deeper into this, because I think for me, I feel like that's kind of like the essence of what we're trying to get through to in this episode as well, where that is a different way of thinking about like workload identity is a thing. It's not about IP addresses. I'm going to go back to the example of an individual who may be working in a Bank of America, listening to this and going, still the same, isn't it? Like, how different could this be? Are we asking them to kind of like ditch the old network? So if someone comes up to them and says, hey, I'm going to build a Kubernetes cluster here, and should their approach be, well, we need to redefine how networking would work for that cluster and leave everything alone? Or should they try and bring what they already traditionally do onto the new world? Like, how would this, and maybe this is where, if you can dig a bit deeper into the whole, I guess if you guys used to use the Kubernetes example, how would I go about doing this? Would I just go workload identity? I'm listening to this and I'm sure people can Google the technicality of it, yeah. But the mindset that you were talking about earlier where, hey, it's about workload identity. And now we have mesh networks, which allows us that next level of separation. Like, what was it before? And what is it doing now?
I'll sort of use a couple of examples. One is with platforms like Kubernetes, you do absolutely have the ability to now associate a strong workload identity to your application. Specifically, there's something called SPIFFE. It stands for Secure Production Identity Framework for Everyone Else, SPIFFE, which is a way, it's a standard for how you would associate something like an X509 certificate or a JWT, is the other standard that it uses, JSON Web Token, and associate that strong identity with your unit of deployment in Kubernetes, which is a pod or your deployment. And in effect, what that allows you to do in Kubernetes is every workload can get a strong identity, typically something like a certificate. And what that means is service-to-service communications, you can now include the strong identity. And the benefit of that is it shouldn't matter if your services move around. Essentially, you're building your trust and your access controls based on the strong identity. You could potentially complement that with other things like things in Kubernetes as a concept called network policies, which allow you to create IP address based or dynamic IP address based rule sets, which are complementary based on the Kubernetes labels. So based on the metadata and the application. The challenge is most organizations miss the steps to take advantage of some of these more advanced concepts because they want to get things working quickly. They don't necessarily understand the concepts and whatnot. So the example I talked about where you can assign an X509 certificate, a SPIFFE certificate. Typically in Kubernetes, you would do that by associating it with a service account. Every deployment has an associated service account and you need to create, okay, I have this application, I'm going to give it a service account name, and then you can assign an identity. The problem is most deployments in Kubernetes don't create a separate service account for every deployment, which means Kubernetes will say, okay, I'm just going to associate you with the default service account. And the pitfall of that is that if you have 50 applications all using the default service account, they all get the exact same strong identity, which means the concept of trying to do access control among services disappears. So there's sort of a checklist of things that sort of a number of resources available on how you go about building your runtime security controls in Kubernetes. And by the way, this is very distinct from config time and build time security controls, but for runtime, for auth N and auth C based on a strong identity, there's a number of things that you can do that specifically rely on this concept of strong identity, things like SPIFFE. And it's the same also when it comes to client identity, because obviously your Kubernetes clusters are not in isolation. They're serving a bunch of clients potentially on the internet. You know, it could be a service provider deploying 5G where it's all web services hosted on Kubernetes. But again, as long as you have some way of defining what that client identity is, like a JWT, like a token, like a X509 certificate, which is possible, you want to be able to leverage that across your infrastructure, across every service, all the way to data access. And one thing, again, a common mistake I see in a lot of organizations is they might do that authentication and authorization at the edge, maybe at the edge of the infrastructure, at the edge of the Kubernetes cluster, and leave things wide open internally. That's good. That's better than nothing. But in today's world, I mean, there's you don't get points for it's okay.
Yeah.
you want to do it properly all the way.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I'll definitely recommend people check out Kubernetes Space, because would you say that's probably the more popular cloud native service from an adoption perspective that a lot of people might say face in their current environments at the moment? Like, I'm sure there are more services as well which are popular, but somehow Kubernetes has been in the radar for a long time now. This is making me also feel bad as well for people who are listening and going, man, there's a lot of complexity around this. There is this whole policy as code that I have to control the network and I have to do this. So from that perspective, are we asking them to develop a new skill set in a way? Like, what kind of skill set should the new security team should be looking at in their teams to be able to, say, deal with on-premise, but at the same time have this complex world of cloud native Kubernetes containers and everything, deal with that?
I might take a step back again on this one, because look, products come and go. Technologies come and go, orchestrators come and go, cloud services come and go. And you might learn something for Kubernetes. It might be different for Fargate or serverless or whatever. So yeah. To begin with, I'd say, actually, even before I get to some of the things that people need to get grounded on is the fundamentals, like what is an identity? You know, get to know the basics and things like certificate management. What's a certificate? You know, what when you look at a JSON web token, understand what the format is. And then when you look at things like authentication and authorization, try and understand what is being done rather than necessarily, an individual product and how it does it. That you can learn later. But even before that, I'd say there's one other thing. If you're looking at this from wearing a hat of a security practitioner or security professional, one thing I'd suggest is go work, if you have the option, go work in an application team for a while, few months, few weeks if you can, few months if possible, and live the life of an application developer, an application owner. If you're an application owner, go work in the security team for a few weeks and try and understand how and what sort of motivates each of these teams and what is slowing them down. But it'll also give you an idea of what it takes to secure an application, what it takes to roll out an application to begin with. So that cross-pollination of ideas is an important sort of underpinning. Now, on top of that, obviously, know the concepts you need to know. And then beyond that, there's going to be cloud provider specific instantiation of that, how you do identity, AWS versus Azure versus Google Cloud versus IBM. There's going to be nuances, but as long as you understand the basics, you'd be able to understand the instantiations. And sorry, go ahead. Yeah. Look, and then wherever possible, try and understand what will it take to make things faster, better? How do you get automation? Ultimately, products, whether it's, like the company I'm advising, Aquinox, where there's a lot of focus on automating more processes, building policies, machine learning, unsupervised machine learning, all of that needs to complement what an organization already needs to have as a skill set. Yeah. And a product, any product, needs to come in with the ability to help automate and speed things up. But the organization needs to understand, or the individual needs to understand, why they're doing it in the first place.
Actually, that's an interesting, I love how you explain it as well, man, because what we're trying to get to is automation is obviously helpful, and we definitely need to understand the identity pieces of how that has evolved from, hey, identity is no longer just a sheesh, but from a networking perspective as well, we have identities. The application team just want to release applications. Security wants to protect the same application. Clearly, the goals are still the same. It's just about understanding what the other person's perspective is. So using that as a premise of, hey, we've cross-pollinated, and I'm not going to use the word DevSecOps here. What are some of the basic things people can start off with? It sounds like identity clearly plays a big role with certificate management. So if someone who's listening to this, and probably from on-premise world now, and realizes that they have a cloud-native Kubernetes environment in their environment, or maybe is soon going to be part of a conversation where it's going to be about Kubernetes, what are some of the basic things that they can have? Like, you already mentioned certificate management. Are there other things that they can consider as good starting points to start building security, which in a way that it doesn't come from the shackles of the on-premise network?
We've had some transitions in the industry over the last many years where sometimes I even question this notion of calling something on-premise versus cloud. And it sort of goes back to this mindset of on-premise, we have a firewall, we have an intranet, so we are secure. Reality is in 2021, that notion is, look, every breach that happens, you always have to guarantee that there's some asset somewhere that has been exposed. So even in the on-premise world, I think the fundamental principles still apply, which is that you are protecting the asset, you are protecting access control to and from the workload or the service. But things like identity, okay, this is where I tend to refer to things like strong identity, which is like an X509, maybe a JWT, versus also, you know, you can also in some cases look at things like IP addresses or DNS names as identity as well. But you do want to distinguish between where you use what. So as an example, you know, there are products in the market today that look at the fact that, okay, you have a workload running on this IP and it's dynamic and you create a bunch of rules, which is you also have products that go look at the fact that a workload is doing a DNS request for a given service. And then what they do is they also look at the IP addresses associated with the DNS and then dynamically create firewall rules for that. Allow that or not. The challenge is as you get to microservice patterns, like with things like the Envoy proxy, which is commonly used these days, these proxies will allow the application to do a DNS request. But when they send traffic, because they do load balancing at the client side, they dynamically change where that request will go. It could be to a completely distinct IP address. And so this notion of having some sort of control centrally that can go into the level of understanding which IP is where, that's increasingly antiquated. The other example for that is if you sort of build these perimeter security controls, you should ask yourself, what are those requests coming in for? Okay, this request is for this web service talking to this web service over port 443. So you open up a firewall rule for port 443. What is that doing? What good is that doing to you? What happens if someone was to tunnel some other traffic through port 443, WebSockets, you know, tunnel, going and exposing things to the outside, especially if you've got TLS 1.3, what are you going to do? So these are some of the questions to ask. So what is the purpose of what you're doing? And if you had the option to now have more finer grained controls next to the workload, shouldn't you take advantage of this? And this is where when you look at platforms like Kubernetes, there's a lot of options to help you make that shift. It's the same in cloud platforms, whether it's, you know, whether it's a serverless platform or other container-based platforms as well. There's increasingly options to allow you to get better security closer to the workload in a much more dynamic way. But it does require you to potentially rethink what security means to you, especially network security.
That's making me also question, what would you consider as a mature practice for network security? Obviously, we can paint an ideal picture, but a lot of people may be looking for benchmarks for, I think I do good enough for security. So from a maturity perspective, what would you consider a mature practice of this?
If you're looking to see how you stack up, again, there's two parts to it. One is how you stack up is irrelevant if you're hit by the next breach. So you have to worry about, have you protected your assets? Have you protected all of the things that you need to protect? Secondly, if you're looking for ways to benchmark and validate if what you're doing is sufficient, look, there's all of these standards organizations that have built benchmarks. You've got the CIS, Center for Internet Security, that has the CIS benchmarks, and they have it for different cloud platforms. They have for Kubernetes. And if you look at platforms like Kubernetes, there's open source implementations like KubeBench that'll analyze your configs. Actually, that's a good point because, again, look, some of these tend to look at your configurations. So there's config and build time artifacts that are validated for security. Then there is deploy time validation, things like policy governance. You could do OPA, Open Policy Agent, Kyvern. There's a number of technologies that can sort of attach to it admission control when you're deploying the application or via your pipeline. And then there's runtime security, which is what happens when your application is deployed, and mm-hmm. then you need to validate it secure. So there's all of these benchmarks and tools that can do that. But if you're looking at this from a sort of a little bit, I'm being a little bit facetious here, but let's say if you're trying to make the shift from traditional to cloud native, and you're wondering, have I built enough into my security structure? The thing to always also think about is, have you encumbered? Because if you have, chances are people are going to find ways around that. And that's where the problem starts. And a good way, I've used this example in the past. So which is, let's say you have a Kubernetes cluster with some applications deployed in a given cloud platform. It could be a managed cluster or whatever. Have a cluster in a different cloud platform. Just take a workload from this cluster, redeploy it to a different cluster, and measure how long it takes for that redeployed application to go live. Measure the time it takes to have that redeployed application go be ready when it's receiving requests and transacting things. If you're measuring it in the order of hours, or more likely days, which is what most weeks in some organizations, because you have so much intermediate process, chances are you're doing it wrong. You should be ideally measuring it in seconds, where moving an application from one cloud to another, from one cluster to another, from one part of the infrastructure to another, your security needs to follow the workload, where you should also be confident that that security is sufficient, and that happens in a matter of, it happens as your application transitions. So your security always follows the workload. And in the world we live in today, it has to be instantaneous, seconds and milliseconds and microseconds, not weeks and hours.
No, and I think to your point, well, it's a good standard to get up to, I guess, identifying things in microseconds, but I would definitely be interested in learning more about this, and maybe others as well. So where does someone, would you say people should upskill in cloud native skills? Is that like, because I'm sure people listening to this going, okay, what am I learning then? So I've got all this awesome information from Karthik now, but where do I go and find, like, what am I Googling for, I guess, next, just to upskill myself?
No, I have a great question as well. So there's sort of two or three things where I'd suggest a starting point. One is, if you want to get a reasonably good sort of broad brush across some of the security, especially network security concepts that you should think about when it comes to cloud native security, I'd suggest going to the CNCF SIG security working group. And if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find it. But they put out a few documents. There is one document which has a pretty broad stroke across not just Kubernetes, but cloud native platforms in terms of the kinds of concepts you need to think about. And it's not just focused on network security. They also focused on build time, how you build things like container images, how you, you know, obviously security is a lot more than just scanning or config time security or deploy time, but they cover all of it. And it's sort of a very superficial, but it's a very broad stroke across a lot of these technologies. Yep. But then it also provides a number of jumping off points to go deeper into more interesting concepts there. So that's one thing I would recommend as a good jumping off point. Also, it's interesting that in the last year or two, especially with the increased focus on cybersecurity within the US government, as an example, a number of government agencies like the NGA, the DoD, they've all been publishing these sort of blueprints on what does security in a cloud native way mean. And sometimes they refer to more sort of slightly harder to read NIST documents, National Institute of Standards and Technology, but there's a number of sort of concepts here. The risk is the more you read, you'll realize that there is a lot to read. And this is where, unfortunately, people tend to take shortcuts, like saying, oh, I have a product I need to know. Do you meet the OWASP top 10, which is the top 10 attacks commonly recently found in web security? And if it meets that, then we're good. And the reality is, if someone is going to attack you, they're not going to limit themselves to just those 10 attacks. Yep. And so it's really on to you, your organization, your consultants, and quite specifically, everyone in the organization, from the application team to the security team, to collaborate. And this is where this is why it's such a hard problem these days The reality, and the sad reality, unfortunately, is that the technologies have gotten more complex and the number of moving parts are significantly more. So there is no easy answer, unfortunately, to say, learn these five things and you're done.
But I think the probably one takeaway from what you mentioned, and probably this is still a hard thing to take away, is just to be able to talk to each other, like application team, security team. I mean, I would hate to use the word DevSecOps for this as well, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people were like, yeah, that's just DevSecOps. But I think the collaboration, because the traditional model kind of created a clear divide between security and application. To your point, having that understanding of what does it take to deploy an application in a cloud world, it's very different to what it used to be on-premise. There's like so many moving parts, to your point. IP addresses are not like that very transient. Like this, so having an understanding of that probably is a good start. So that's what my biggest takeaway from that. Hey, what should I learn? Try and learn how to talk to your application people, or the other way around, security people, for what does it take to kind of achieve success?
No, Ashish. I've worked with a number of organizations, including some of the ones you even mentioned in the course of the podcast. Some of the more mature organizations, especially the ones where they have the organizational mandate to allow people to flow between teams and literally have to live in other teams, It does two things. One is it builds more trust between the teams, and there's this direct connectivity. And two, it gives, you know, you are putting yourself in the shoes of someone that has to do something else, even though you have to, you might be a security practitioner and you have to assure the security of your infrastructure or your application. You cannot hinder agility. You cannot hinder, you know, functionality. All of, you need to do all of the above in today's
yeah,
world.
Yeah, find a balance somewhere.
Yeah, indeed.
Awesome. Well, that's pretty much what we had for this interview, man. But I do have a fun question. I've got three questions, so it shouldn't take that long. But just to help the audience get to know you, it's more around, hey, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on cloud native technologies?
You mean in the last year and a half? I think the last year and a half has been a little bit of a reset for a lot of folks. So going back prior to that, I used to travel a lot, just find random corners of the planet to go hang out and find, you know, put on a backpack and go get into trouble, speak random languages. And obviously it's been a little bit trickier recently. Hand in hand with that, I used to do some Latin dancing. I used to, you know, there's all kinds of interesting activities you pick up along the way. But I think this last year, year and a half, it's probably more staying grounded and reconnecting with family, friends, often virtual. And it sort of makes you realize, you know, look, it makes you realize all the things you're taking for granted, which you can't anymore. So I don't know.
Hopefully we get to traveling and dancing once again, man, soon. Like, I mean, I guess UK is almost on the way anyway. So hopefully the rest of the world does it as well. Thanks for sharing that, man. And what is something that you're proud of? Maybe not on your social media.
Believe it or not, I've actually gotten off a lot of social media. I still have Twitter, I have a little bit. But what you know, look, to me, the things which I've always enjoyed is, especially in a professional context, has been working with some of these organizations. And these are deployments which are now mainstream, where it's, you look at some of the, you talk about financial, working with some of these financial organizations where the, not just the commerce, the economies of many countries, many of the major Western countries are dependent on the security and reliability of things like the Kubernetes platform. I had a chance to collaborate working with some of these organizations and helping them sort of get from a state where they were sort of scratching the surface, trying to understand that, to adopting it and then being an advanced practitioner. That's wonderful. Having a chance to influence some of the early technologies, to ask questions like, why do you need this complexity? That's a constant battle in our space. There's always complexity. Working with organizations like, for example, Acunox that I'm working with, and be able to sort of challenge them to do better for users. So we provide users not just with the advanced technology, but also help them consume it. Those are the kinds of things that for me, it gives me a sense of satisfaction.
Yeah, that's awesome. And sounds like the Steve Jobs kind of thing as well. So simplicity is hard as well, man. So great to like show this. Just look at this amazing machine and what it can do. But like, is it easy to use? Like, not sure. You need a manual to go through that. So no, it's a good example as well of things to be involved in, man. Last question. What's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
I really wish I could pick one. It's like people ask me like, hey, what's your favorite country? Everyone is different. I sort of thrive in always changing things around. And, you know, for me, I tend to split my time between London and San Francisco. The benefit of living in the city is you get, like, if I crave laksa, there's a wonderful laksa place near here. If I crave Armenian food, if I crave Azeri food, there's a place here. And I tend to enjoy it all. So
would you say you're like a foodie then?
Yeah, that term is so overutilized these days. I'm someone that totally enjoys all kinds of food and cuisine. And I'm the kind of guy that, look, if I have a craving for gelato, I may just hop on a flight to go to Milan to my favorite gelato place.
Oh, actually, being in the UK, that definitely would allow you to do that as well. That's pretty awesome, man. I think and having being so eclectic as well is a kudos as well, because I think I definitely find food connects a lot of people. And, oh, man, like, if I can get an opportunity ever to try different kind, I will totally jump on the opportunity. But I just wanted to say thank you for coming on board here, man, and sharing the knowledge with everyone here as well. Where can people find you if they have follow-up questions about this world of network security and cloud native kind of a world? Where can they find you and connect with you to ask any follow-up questions?
A couple of options. Obviously, you can find me on LinkedIn, but on Twitter, my handle is world. Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter. Yeah. That's one of the few social media avenues where I just I still tune in. And, you know, the other usual sources like, you know, LinkedIn, usually you can find me on if you just Google me, you can find me on, you know, find my email and whatnot. So
yeah, awesome. And I'll include them in the show notes as well. But thank you so much for coming in, man. I definitely enjoyed our conversation. And I think we had about 50 odd people watching this as well. So I'm sure they enjoyed the conversation as well. Well, I'll encourage you to leave a comment or reach out to you directly for a question and we can come back to this. But thanks so much, man. I feel like it was really good to talk about some of the, I guess, the unspoken parts of networking and like how suddenly, I think you and I joked about this the other day where, hey, CCNA and MCSP and all those used to be like a thing and now no one puts them in the resume, but people, I mean, I guess it's, there's still a relevancy, but I don't know if that's the number one relevancy, but I'm so glad we are kind of at least gave those people a path towards something maybe a bit more better future, man. But thanks so much, man. I look forward to probably having you again and maybe for another topic, though.
No, first of all, Ashish, thank you for doing this podcast because the content, the speakers, the questions you get, I mean, all of this is wonderful. And I think this community, the more we can collaborate and share ideas, which is what you're facilitating, it's going to make us all better. So thank you for doing this.
No, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. Thank you. And for everyone else, I'll see you on the weekend, which is our regular time slot as well. We have a Brazilian specialist. That's a hint for what's happening this weekend. But I hope everyone has a good evening or a good night and a good day, I guess. But I'll see you on the next episode. Thanks. Peace. Thank you for listening to that episode of Cloud Security Podcast. If you found some new information from that episode, we would appreciate if you share it with others. Share it with us as well if you have any good feedback or good learnings from the episode. We are on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you don't find us there, you can always go on our website, www.cloudsecuritypodcast.tv, to listen to the latest episode. We appreciate your support in helping us grow. It helps us bring more guests. It helps us support the channel. So really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time and talk to you on the next episode.